That's one way to blow your load.
Radio Drone.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Drone. I am Josh Headley. With me, as always, is my cybernetic co-host, the Peter.
Yes.
And my not-android co-host, the Cecil.
I like to think I'm kind of like, you know, Oliver Grunier in Automatic.
The French martial artist, yes.
he was a cyborg, or even, but again, they called him a robot, or they, and a, you know, android and every other thing.
He's all of them. He can be all of them.
He can, you know what, he's so bad, he can be whatever he wants.
But we're only going to talk a little bit about Oliver Grunier tonight. So go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, and you will get 50% off a single item, 3 free DVDs, a free sex swing, and free U.S. shipping. All for using the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. Remember, we also have a Patreon, so you can help us out there too. Tonight, we're going to talk about the Cyborg franchise. Not Cyborg movies in general, although we are going to have to mention a bunch of them, which will make sense later. I want to talk about the Cyborg franchise. Cyborg, Cyborg 2 Glass Shadow, and Cyborg 3 The Recycler, which is a franchise that's not a franchise, that became a franchise that's part of a bigger franchise.
That was started by Albert Pune, that was taken from a production design or set or old script that was going to be Masters of the Universe 2 and became something completely different.
This is going to get convoluted, so stick with me for a moment here, okay? So Cyborg, the 1989 movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme, was born out of two other films that didn't happen. So in 1987, Canon Films had made Masters of the Universe, and it basically broke them. One thing is, they broke their agreement with Mattel, so Masters of the Universe 2 was probably not going to happen, even if Masters of the Universe was successful. They had also, Canon was sort of built on bad paper. It was built on junk bonds, and eventually that kind of thing collapses, and that happened in 1987. Canon was going under. They had already planned a Masters of the Universe 2. At the same time, they were making, or were going to be making, a Spider-Man live-action film. Right around this time, Marvel Comics had two Spider-Man titles, and they had live-action covers of an actor in a costume for the cover. That was going to be the actor from the Spider-Man movie. They had sets built for the Spider-Man movie. They had sets and costumes built for the Masters of the Universe sequel. Then Canon went under. So what was going to happen was Albert Pune was going to be shooting Spider-Man first. Then they were going to shoot Masters of the Universe 2. Sort of. They were going to shoot the beginning of Spider-Man because the actor, they wanted to shoot all of the before Spider-Man gets bit by the radioactive spider scenes. Then they would take an 8-week break while the actor bulked up for the post-getting bit scenes, and in that time they would shoot Masters of the Universe 2. They were going to shoot part of Spider-Man, then Masters of the Universe 2, then Spider-Man. Then Canon went bankrupt, so they had all these sets, they had all these costumes. Albert Pune was like, look, give me $500,000, let me do something with these. And the thing with that is, you can really see the reused costumes. Like Gibson's costume, so obviously Blade's costume from Masters of the Universe. You can definitely see Evil Lyn's costume in there. You can see Skeletor's first costume. You can see that these are reused costumes. Now the story that even to this day is spread around the internet is, Cyborg is what Masters of the Universe 2 was gonna be. That's
not true.
Just
not that at all. It was a different script, I'm sure. That was retooled, but it wasn't for He-Man.
Cyborg is made out of the ashes of Masters of the Universe 2. That's not the same thing. And even then, oh my god, I do enjoy Cyborg. He wanted Chuck Norris for the lead, and he did not like that Jean-Claude Van Damme was, according to him, foisted upon him. I can't see Chuck Norris in this movie.
No.
I gotta go with Canon on this one. Jean-Claude was better than, I like Chuck Norris. He's not right for Slinger.
No, for the aesthetic that the movie had, I think Van Damme was the right choice.
Yeah, he had the right look and the right appeal. And I think maybe the voice maybe wasn't the best, because Van Damme still has kind of the broken, he has the accent that, I don't know, it works for him in certain roles, but in this it did feel a little like, I think maybe he was thinking more the gruff American Chuck Norris, because it was, you know, post-apocalyptic USA, and you know, put a little dirt on Chuck Norris and gruff him up, and maybe that would have, that's the only thing I could think of that he was considering. But I do think that in the end, in this case, Van Damme was really the right choice. And not discounting Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris is a badass. Van Damme was able to do a lot more of, you know, using his flexibility, because a lot of his stunts and stuff are, you know, the big wide kicks and, you know, the crotch splitting and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
See, Albert didn't get his way on Cyborg at all, because originally what he envisioned this is, what Albert wanted to do with this was, and I don't know if this would have ever worked, he wanted to make it, and I'm quoting, a heavy metal opera without dialogue in a black and white. And I don't know if this would have worked.
The chrome version of Mad Max Fury Road?
With a more metal soundtrack. So I don't
that
know,
kinda,
because
it sort of became that. That's kind
of
weird.
It really did.
What happened is this movie was made and then it was taken away. Now the original title is Slinger. In the movie, Slingers is short for gun slingers. They're basically hired guides to help you get from the few remaining cities, from city to city through all the wastelands. You'd hire a slinger to protect you.
Right.
Slinger, while it's more accurate to the movie, I gotta go with canon again on this one, and I'm gonna do this a few more times tonight.
Well, Slinger,
that's not a sellable
like
title.
That sounds more like a sort of Sergio Leone Western kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
really, it's not a sellable title.
It doesn't tell you that it's going to be science fiction. I think Cyborg is a lot more punchy and kind of gets you right to the point of what the movie's going to be.
But at the same time, Peter, Cyborg, a lot of people thought Jean-Claude was the Cyborg. No, he's a human slinger escorting the Cyborg to the location.
But Pearl's not even, Pearl is an android. She's not even a Cyborg.
Okay.
So really it should have been Android.
That's something Pune has never gotten. The Nemesis movies, the Omega Doom film, all of them, including the sequels, they all have
the name.
Yeah. Well, they all have complete artificial people called cyborgs and humans with robot parts called androids. I don't know why Albert Pune can't get this right.
But in this case, I don't think it was his fault, because the studio wanted the name Cyborg.
Yeah, he wanted Slinger.
He wanted Slinger. So, and the movie was supposed to be sort of a rock opera, a heavy metal soundtrack, which is available in the Pune cut. As much as I think that, you know, the score that they put for Cyborg is good, the metal soundtrack for Slinger, I personally think is so much better.
Oh, it is so much better. And I hate to be this guy. That's the only thing
that's the only thing I love to be this guy.
The soundtrack is the only thing in the director's cut I like better. I was shocked at how much I hated Pune's cut of the film. I'm not talking, because when Pune made his director's cut of this film, he only had VHS masters, things like that, some on beta, some widescreen, some full frame. So his is put together more of like a work print. And I'm totally discounting that. But his cuts wreck the film. The he has way too boring of fight scenes, because you kind of need editing to make a fight scene kinetic. His are beyond dull. He cut out key character moments that he thought slowed the film down from a pacing level. Yes, but now your version makes no sense, Albert. He moved things around to the point where now you go, but wait a minute, that clearly can't be how it was originally meant, Albert, because now it makes no sense. I don't like his director. His director's cut's a fucking mess.
The problem was that there really should have been a give and take. A lot of times, 99% of the time I side with the director. There is still a need the producer's input, and there needs to be a give and take. Okay, well, this will work, but this needs to go. Or in this case, if we had gotten his proper vision when he did Slinger slash Cyborg, I think there would have been a little more give and take, and we probably would have ended up with a perfect blending of his ideas and with the studio's ideas, and we would have ended up with proper film. Because now, when he did Slinger, it was decades after the fact. Pune had already, he's already suffering from strokes, and so he's not, I love the guy, but he's not completely there. So I question how much of the Slinger cut is really what he would have done back in the day.
I think it is, though, because there's that whole deleted subplot. Remember, in the film, as it's released, it's implied the bad guys are Satanists. You know, they just worship Satan. Mm-hmm. In the Slinger cut, they're actually working for Satan. They are agents of demons, and demons exist in this world. And in the Slinger cut, they're trying to stop technology being returned to a post-apocalyptic world instead of stopping a plague, the cure for a plague. It's a completely different movie. The story's completely different. Dumb! In Pune's version. I'm sorry, bringing Satan actually into this? Into his post-apocalyptic cyborg road warrior movie? Is dumb!
No, it's awesome! Because the characters, it's very, very based in heavy metal. And what is the big things with metal? Is the devil. So you've got all these characters that are all named after different guitars. You've got Pearl, Fender,
Gibson.
You've got this blaring metal soundtrack. And what better to have, as an enemy than the f***ing devil?
I think it's idiotic is what it is.
Oh, you just, it's a post-apocalyptic film. Why wouldn't, so we're gonna put the devil in there too? Sure, why not? Why is that all of a sudden, that's too far? You know, the world blew up, okay. The world blew up and the devil's back. Nah!
I think Cyborg is the best live-action adaptation of Fist of the North Star next to Steel Dawn.
There you go.
There's also one other thing. Now, I am not saying plagiarism. I'm saying definite inspiration. But there was a Spanish comic book that came out before Cyborg Slinger called Hombre, which was serialized in heavy metal in the late 80s and early 90s. So it you might have read it under a different title. I saw these in heavy metal. Man,
how similar is it?
It's pretty similar. I'm just talking the basic broad strokes.
How many of these movies were to begin with by some lower, lesser known comic or a strip from heavy metal or even like a 2000 AD kind of thing? Like, it likely was.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not calling plagiarism because
Cyborg does feel very much like a pulpy comic strip. Even sometimes very much feels like an 80s anime. I compared it to Fist of the North Star, and I absolutely compare it to that completely unironically, because it does feel that way.
It absolutely does.
It feels like an 80s anime, like Mad Max inspired kind of thing, like Fist of the North Star is, and it's very much what Cyborg feels like.
Cyborg, according to Albert Pune, and this is very tenuous. He claims that the Nemesis movies and the Cyborg movies, plus the movie Omega Doom and Knights, all made by him, are all in the same continuity. He says Nemesis takes place before Cyborg, and then Knights takes place after Cyborg, then there's Cyborg 2, Cyborg 3, then because of the time jump in the Nemesis movies, Nemesis 2, Nemesis 3, then the Omega Doom, then Nemesis 4. And then the new ones, cause see, he just made a new Cyborg movie called Cyborg Nemesis, The Dark Rift, which is a prequel to both Nemesis and Cyborg and definitively links them together. So you're just looking at this going, oh my god, this is a continuity clusterfuck, isn't it?
Let's just say that at this point, okay, the Cyborg cop films are connected with it too.
At this point,
somewhere
you
in
might
the middle,
as well.
Cyborg cop
somewhere,
happened, and then
yeah.
Slinger happened.
And just another, it wasn't the apocalypse across the country. It was just, maybe the East Coast, and then out the West Coast was Cyborg Cop.
the Cyborg 2 and 3 are not sequels to Cyborg, but they are sequels to one another. So according to his continuity, they go from a post-apocalyptic wasteland into Blade Runner and then back for Nemesis 2 into a post-apocalyptic wasteland, according to Albert Pune's continuity.
And had in a, included an American Gladiator for some reason.
It just...
as like, as the new hero. That's what killed me about the Nemesis sequels. I wanted, Oliver Grenier back. They brought in, Susie Price. And I'm not, like, I don't have a problem with her. Her acting was a little not good.
They are the same character though.
But yeah, I'm like, why? Why? Like, cause the first, like, I don't hate the Nemesis sequels, but they are a steep drop off because the first one is so amazing.
I don't disagree at all, but he always wanted in the first film Alex to have been a girl at some point, and they just ran out of parts, so that's why we get Oliver Grenier, so that's why she finally gets to be a girl in the sequels. Oliver Grenier is playing a female in Nemesis, which is weird when you say out loud.
Not even really weird, just kind of not thought out as well as it could have been. They have those parts, but it's in a post-apocalyptic wasteland now, so where the hell did she get those parts? When did Albert Pune's dementia start?
Well, we're not going to discuss the Nemesis movies because that I want to do a whole franchise on that train wreck. I just wanted to bring them up because they're connected, in quotes, to the Cyborg movies.
They're somehow meant to be sequels to
connected.
To Cyborg.
It was a massive hit for canon at the time. Remember, they're going bankrupt. $500,000 budget makes $10 million. That's
that's
pretty
really
good freaking hit for canon right there. Canon would have probably made a sequel had they not gone bankrupt at the time, as I just said. Now, there was a movie made by Michael Schroeder. He made a movie called Glass Shadow, which was a straight-up cyberpunk movie. Somehow, I guess he was channeling Albert Pune, because he also has complete artificial people called cyborgs, and what we would call cyborgs listed as androids. So, now, there are stories here. I don't know if this is related to Albert Pune's dementia or not, but he's contradicted himself on many occasions. Originally, he said he had nothing to do with the Cyborg sequels at all. Then later gave an interview saying he was okay with them, and he gave Schroeder the plots, but he didn't want to do them because he was working on at this time. He was working on Nemesis, so he didn't do the sequel only because he was busy. He says he was involved, then he wasn't involved, then he was, then he wasn't. It all depends on when you talk to Albert Pune, whether he had any involvement in Cyborg 2 Glass Shadow or not. So
oh,
I don't
God.
Know if that's the dementia or not, so I don't know which story to believe. It's clear.
That could just be like bad memory or something.
Well, he has dementia, so he can't remember a lot of things. I have never heard Michael Schroeder talk about it. He wrote and directed both Cyborg 2 and 3. But here's the thing. Cyborg 2 is not a sequel, but it is a sequel. It was made as a completely independent cyberpunk cyborg movie called Glass Shadow. After the fact, they found out that the distribution company had the rights through probably a buyout when Canon went bankrupt and was trying to liquidate assets to Cyborg. So they renamed it Cyborg 2, in some countries Cyborg 2 Glass Shadow, and then they bought some footage from the first film of Jean-Claude and fighting and all that stuff to use as a dream sequence slash flashback in this movie, therefore making it a Cyborg sequel, but it was only made a Cyborg sequel after the fact. Do you see how these f***ing movies are a train wreck to try and track? Cyborg 2, the sequel, not sequel. I actually think it's the best film in this franchise.
It's a genuinely good movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, man. It's well directed. Michael Schroeder's direction is good. He doesn't have choppy editing. Set design is great. I love the production design. Jack Palance steals every goddamn scene he's in.
Oh, he's perfect for that movie. He really fits everything. And even like a really great early showing from Angelina Jolie as well. She did a great job in the movie.
Yeah.
She's not happy with it.
Like, how can you not
I'll fall
in love
I will
with her.
Bite you, Josh.
Dude, she had,
I will bite you.
she just had, she was on point. I mean, her, like, she was beautiful. Her fighting, I thought, was good. She played the sympathetic character, but also was a complete badass.
Mm-hmm.
It really had, I mean, she, I thought, was, there was a lot of good going on, but I thought that she was a large part of what made it good. And it's a shame.
She really
went in on it. Well, it's a shame because that's one of the movies that she kind of discounts now. She's, was in that movie. You know,
that's unfortunate because she really fits the aesthetic of like a cyberpunk kind of hero. That sort of neo-noir, you know, neon-lit kind of character. She fit it very well, and she did a great early performance there. It's unfortunate that a lot of Hollywood stars will kind of turn their noses up at their early roles like that and stuff.
I'm going to quote.
It could be a lot worse, Angelina. It's not Grizzly 2.
I'm going to quote Angelina. After she saw the film at the premiere, quote, "I went home and got sick," unquote.
Oh, God.
Yeah, come on.
Come on, like, it's, bitch, you made Tomb Raider.
Yeah, bitch, come on.
Yeah,
well, fuck. with Glass Shadow, it's Entertainment Weekly selected it as Angelina Jolie's worst film, whereas lot of people somehow looked down on Jack Palance for this, because he had just won the Oscar for City Slickers, and this was his next movie after that. You had everybody questioning, why are you doing four pay movies now, Jack? You're a fucking Oscar winner. But you tell me, now I've never heard him speak of Cyborg 2, you tell me he's not having a ball in this movie playing Mercy.
He has a ball regardless of what role he's playing. I think that the guy just always loved acting no matter what role he got. He's always been the entertaining Jack Palance that we always get. Even his like minor role in Tim Burton's Batman, like he still oozes charisma in that movie. You are my number one guy. always fantastic. Jack Palance is never not great.
Now, I don't know this factually. I don't know if this is part of the script or not, but his famous line from this, "If you're gonna dine with the devil, bring a long spoon." That sounds so ad-libbed, and that is so Jack Palance. I'm 99% sure that was not in the script, and they just loved it so much they kept it in.
Well, he delivered it so great. It's such a quotable line.
Cause it makes no sense, but it's a great line.
it totally, yeah, I'm like, cause at the time you're like, yeah! Wait,
what did he just say?
I don't understand what that's supposed to mean. Like,
but it sounded cool, so yay!
So yay, Jack, he blew up, who was the bad guy?
The bad guy was the police chief from Beverly Hills Cop 2. Although in this, he's got that balding kind of late 80s, early 90s ponytail thing going, remember?
Oh no, the rat tail?
No, it was a ponytail, but it was just where he only had hair in the back, basically, because he was balding so much. Well, you know, he was that cool executive kind of look.
Oh,
Billy,
God.
No, Billy Drago, I'm thinking.
Oh, well, Billy Drago. Billy Drago, he's the bounty hunter trying to catch him. He doesn't get blown up by Jack Palance.
No, it's been a while since I've seen the movie. I thought he got, cause didn't he?
Billy Drago gets his face ripped off by a propeller blade when he's fighting with Colt 45 in the ring.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Billy Drago gets his face ripped off.
That was the beauty of him. Like, he was great because the whole movie, he keeps getting his face messed up.
Billy Drago was in a different film than the rest of them. He was chewing so much scenery. You can't not love him in this. He was a living cartoon in this movie.
But that's what, I mean, but the movie in and of itself is a cartoon.
Yeah.
That was part of the beauty of it.
I really, like I said, of the three real Cyborg movies, I really liked two. It had a good look. I liked the lighting. I liked the set designs. I thought the costuming was great because back at the time it was called just a Blade Runner ripoff. Just another of the Blade Runner ripoffs. I think it's more than that.
No,
it definitely borrows some of the aesthetic for sure, but it is very much still its own thing as well.
Oh, without a doubt.
Colt is not. You know, he's not hunting down the, I mean, it's a whole, yeah, it's a completely different story. It just so happens to have humans and cyborgs or androids in it. It's just, it's a neat movie. I think the first one I really enjoy. I enjoy both cuts. I enjoy Cyborg and I enjoy Slinger, but I think that Cyborg 2, even though it does not have as big a budget, oddly enough, as the first one, I still think that, it looks really terrific and it's just a cool movie. It's just really a good, neat little movie.
It's one of those perfect examples of like early 90s, late 80s kind of drenched in neon, future gazing, cyberpunk anti-heroes. People are kind of miserable, downtrodden, you know. It's a perfect example of one of those kind of movies, and we really don't see a lot of those anymore because it was such a product of its time.
What's unfortunate is that this film is always going to be looked at as, oh, that B movie that Angelina Jolie did before she got famous.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? You also did Mr. and Mrs. Smith, okay?
Oh, God, that movie is a pile
of crap. I'll keep listing them off.
Well, we have to talk about the ending of 2, because 2 leads directly into 3. So at the end, Colt and Cash is Angelina Jolie's character. Colt and Cash have a life together. They escape to the desert. Because she's an android / cyborg, she will not grow old. They have a life together. He grows old and dies as an old man, and she kind of wanders off to find her next adventure. That's the end of this movie.
It's a terrific ending because, like,
it's kind of a Highlander ending if you think about it.
Yeah. Like, he's sitting on the porch in, like, the desert. They've got this old shack that they've been living in, and he's noticeably, you know, they did the makeup on him to make him look really
old.
And
she still looks like Angelina Jolie.
And she's still 18-year-old Angelina Jolie, and she still loves him, and he just kind of dies in her arms. And it's a very, like, bittersweet ending to a certain degree. I thought it was, like, a perfect ending. It's very sad, but also, I don't know, it was something that was really well done. It, of course, led into them making a sequel.
Well, which is also by Michael Schroeder, so he also wrote and directed this one as well. Now, this is 3 years later in our time, but this takes place only about 2 weeks to 4 weeks after the last film, because now Angelina Jolie didn't come back. We have head of the classes, Christine Hodge, as Cash now, so same character, different actress, and she's wandering the desert. She's pregnant. She's not supposed to be able to get pregnant, which also means right before his death, he was still shooting fully loaded bullets. Think about that for Colt in the last movie.
Well, what gets me about this one is Christine and I don't know how to pronounce her name.
That's
the thing. I don't know. It's one of those weird kind of, and I'm not discounting, like, I thought she was fine, but I thought that, like, for somebody who's supposed to be replacing Angelina Jolie,
she doesn't look anything like her. I know.
She doesn't look anything like her. Like,
yeah,
not even a little bit.
It's sort of a case of when they replaced, it's much like the Back to the Future effect where they replaced Marty McFly's girlfriend, and it was just a completely different looking actress.
Or Nightmare on Elm Street 3 to Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
I mean, this is just me spitballing, and I don't even know if they would have been even able to get her for this movie, but I feel like a better replacement would have been someone like Gina Gershon.
Maybe. Yeah. I could have seen Gina Gershon.
She's a little more, she's kind of sort of lippy in a similar way that Angelina Jolie is, sort of athletic.
Yeah. No, this one is way lower budget than 2. This one doesn't have the production design. They shot most of Cyborg 3, The Recycler, in the desert. You can tell this one is what you would think of more as like an AIP, Action International Pictures sort of direct-to-video film. Mm. This one's very low budget. Cover art and the trailer love to promote Malcolm McDowell as Lord Talon. They literally, I think, had him for like 3 hours. He appears in one scene, gets electrocuted, and is never... I kept expecting him to come back. Like, you know, Malcolm McDowell's name is above the title. He's going to come back as the big villain or something. No, Richard Lynch is the villain, and he's fine as that.
Richard Lynch is amazing.
You could literally cut Malcolm McDowell out of this movie. It would make no difference at all. I think he was just wandering through where they were filming, and they said, hey, Malcolm, we'll give you a couple $100. Can you just put on a cyborg hand and say some lines?
That's absolutely what it is, and it's a shame that they promoted him so much and not Richard Lynch, because God, that guy is just a consummate professional when it comes to playing just like creepy, grimy villains. He's always amazing at that, and he deserves so much more credit. And he's a great villain in this movie too. And it's also very obvious that this one clearly did drop in budget. This is very much the, we're going to shoot a post-apocalyptic type movie. So we're going to go to the desert. We're going to shoot in some like abandoned warehouses. And then we're going to give people some shoulder pads and mohawks and no one's going to know the difference.
But to be fair, this one seems more inspired by Mad Max than Blade Runner. So,
oh, absolutely. Well, this one fits more in tone with the very first Cyborg. More desert plain, broken buildings, shoulder pads and whatnot. So you could maybe consider this to be, maybe the series is in reverse. The first film is, it takes place further into the future. Two is a prequel, and then three happens like a bit before the first one is actually meant to happen. So maybe it's a series that if you really want to look at it in a way that maybe like fits in a thematic sort of way, maybe that's how you could put it together. But I'd say it's all just, none of these were meant to be Cyborg sequels.
Now, part of the plot of this one is that Cash is pregnant, and that's not supposed to be able to be possible. The humans, although Richard Lynch is playing a cyborg, he's playing a cyborg hunter. He kills cyborgs and strips them for their parts. And again, we're talking full androids here. So he is not an android. He just has like a cybernetic eye and hand. Because Cash is pregnant, they need to get her baby because this is not supposed to be able to happen because they're afraid it is going to affect humanity.
Is it established in the second one that she can't have kids?
She's basically a walking bomb.
Yeah.
Is really the whole point of that, the whole glass shadow thing.
Well, and she was made to be a sex droid,
with
too.
With her cyborg, yeah. the type of cyborg that she is, she doesn't have those, like, organic parts like a working uterus and things like that.
Well, they basically have, like, a working vagina, essentially, because they send them in as, like,
like pleasure bots.
As hookers, basically.
Yeah, and they, you know, whoever they're supposed to be targeting, whatever political person or whatever, they go in, they seduce them because they are, quote unquote, the perfect woman, and they have sex with them, and while they're having sex with them, their temperature rises, which causes them to explode and kill whoever their target is.
That's one way to blow your load.
They also, she finds a bunch of cyborg / androids that are in various states of disrepair, that are hiding out in an underground city, plotting revenge to take back the main cities. And I'm going, this is Blade Runner 2049's plot. Blade Runner 2049 takes a lot from Cyborg f***ing 3, The Recycler. And that is not something that I can just sit on. I was shocked.
Isn't it deeply unsettling how many Hollywood productions take from these smaller movies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they know they can't, like, what are they going to do?
What are you going to do? Sue Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
I honestly feel like I was one of the only people that noticed that. I know that Tarantino wanted to make his own sort of Django rip-off exploitation movie. Like, it's not really a Django remake. It's another fake Django movie. Problem I had with it is that it was Kiyoma. It was very clearly heavily inspired by Kiyoma. It was a guy who, in Kiyoma, he's like a half First Nations person, but it's a lot of that same sort of slavery stuff, you know, left for dead, tortured, comes back at the end to get revenge on everybody. You heard it from me, and you know what? It's true, because I said it. Django Unchained is just a remake of Kiyoma with a black slave instead of a half First Nations tortured slave.
I was shocked when I was watching this, because I haven't seen Cyborg 3 since 1995. When I rewatched it, I couldn't believe how much Blade Runner 2049 I was seeing in this. And I'm going, there is no way those people should be able to get away with just, we're going to take your plot and we're going to do it on a $100 million budget so you don't have a choice. There's also Richard Lynch has a sort of conflicted henchman played by Andrew Bernarski.
Oh, that's who that was.
You didn't recognize him as Jocko?
I thought it was, when I was watching it last night, I thought it was the guy who played a Bobo in the Double Dragon movie.
William Catt was fine as Decaf, one of the malfunctioning cyborg androids, who was kind of funny. Zach Galligan, and I like Zach Galligan in the right role, is brutally miscast as Evans, as the cyborg genius who, the human who knows how to repair all of them. He looks not only bored, totally out of his element in this movie. Zach Galligan is completely miscast in this film.
Is that a guy from Scrubs?
No, that's the guy from Gremlins.
Gremlins.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah,
I didn't even recognize
him. Something or other. Zach Wiener guy.
But yeah, I think he is miscast in this. And then this would be the quote end of the franchise, not counting the new. Okay, we only have a trailer for Cyborg Nemesis, and I don't.
Cyborg Nemesis.
It's literally just shot in the desert with people who are not actors. You look at their line deliveries in the trailer, they're not actors. On consumer-grade equipment that Albert is shooting, and he keeps changing the title. Like, now it's called Cyborg Rise of the Flesh Eaters. What is it?
An alternate title for Hell of the Living Dead?
Hey, I'm not joking. The original title was Badass Angels and Demons.
That's the original title?
That was the original title. I wish I were kidding.
That's a nice title. Cyborg Nemesis. I'm looking it up now on YouTube. It's good lord. They have been working on this for, it's from 5 years ago. Is this going to be out yet?
No, it's not out yet. And like I said, it looks like a Doug Walker shot video. It looks like they're using consumer grade equipment, lots of green screen, lots of bad CGI. I mean, like straight out of the box After Effects CGI. And
yeah, we got Cyborg Rise of the Slingers. It was that in 2012.
Yeah, it's now Rise of the Flesh Eaters. Now,
oh god, this looks horrible. Cyborg Nemesis, The Dark Rift.
See, okay, that is... Okay, Cecil, we gotta go back to Slinger. He originally wanted a different ending for Cyborg, and he wasn't able to shoot it back in 89. Now again, I agree with Cannon, this ending is f***ing awful. So, for Slinger, he shot brand new on a green screen using After Effects, his original ending.
Oh no.
Which ending.
I'm still meaning to see, the Slinger cut. I mean, you can spoil it if you want, I don't really care. I've kind of read what it is, but I haven't watched it.
It looks like something out of that Cyborg Nemesis trailer you're watching, where a woman, a naked girl, just appears inside a giant electronic bubble, stands up, and she's got like cyborg parts you can see, she's got holes blown in her, and she's from the Nemesis future, come back to try and change the past. Literally wanted a Terminator ending.
Oh, come on.
And Cecil, you've seen the Slinger cut. Holy crap, does that footage not match at all, does it?
Thing is, none of the footage matches. Cause it's such a,
I'm talking about, you can tell what was shot in 89 and what was shot in 09.
Well, it's all put together from like, work prints and old, this VHS copy and this footage from here that was shot and obviously new green screen stuff. So it does sound like a mess.
Yeah, it's like, it's VHS footage, it's beta footage, it's old, worn 35 millimeter print footage. So, it's such a mishmash, like sometimes it looks okay, other times it's got the line code, so it just looks god awful, other times it's obviously just work print footage. So, it's really, it is difficult to watch. I think the ending, if they had shot the ending and they had put that in there, it wouldn't be as bad.
No, I agree with that. It's still bad, but it's shockingly, you know, like if George Lucas had no money sort of going back and redoing it and you're just going, Albert, let it go, man. Well, let it go.
I don't fault him for doing that though. It's like, look, here is what I wanted. I obviously can't go back in time, you know, really, and get Jean-Claude Van Damme and everybody to kind of do this, and I can't afford to do it, so I'm just going to do, you know, short of just having like what they did with 28 Days Later, where they just showed the storyboard parts for what the original final act of the film was, said, okay, I'm going to go in and do this in After Effects and kind of do some half-hearted CGI and just kind of show what the ending would have been. And I really don't think it's as bad. I think it looks awful now, obviously, but if the ending had been shot and he was able to include that in there, I don't think it would have been as terrible. I think it would have been like, okay, you know, whatever, that's fine. You know, but it just looks so bad.
Yeah, there's always a difference if you can actually do it in like an efficient way and not just super cheap with a green screen. Like that's going to stand out very, very blatantly when you're using like beta tape footage and VHS footage and old like 16 millimeter like unrefined prints, like that's all gonna really stick out like a sore thumb. Like it's not a good idea.
But at the same time, okay, let's leave the quality aside. That's a terrible ending. All of a sudden to throw Terminator style time travel into this. And yes, I know we didn't have the franchise that would come after it. That was just such a derivative, dumb ending.
It kind of is, yeah. It is what it is, I guess.
It is what it, in the context of what the original film would have been, who's to say that it may all have just kind of worked. Because that's then true. That would have led into what the sequel that he was planning on doing. I mean, is it any different from now? How many movies just end where they're like, okay, well, we're going to lead into the sequel. Like, if anything, he was kind of ahead of his time on that because so many movies now are focusing on, well, we want to get the first movie out there, but we're really going to do everything big in the sequel. And it's like, well, how about you make a good movie first and then you worry about the sequel later. So in this
show
case,
show us what you can do. Go total balls out with what you can do with that first movie.
Yeah. The money that he had and the control that he had, I think that the fact that we ended up with two watchable versions of the same thing is pretty impressive.
See, I look at the first Cyborg as a very competently made film based on the fact that it's made from sets and costumes of other films. And this you can kind of tell the script was written over one weekend. You can sort of see that in this.
It had a very Roger Corman spirit to it.
It didn't feel like a canon film, let's put it that way.
I just mean in terms of like utilizing like sets and costumes that were going to be for something else and turning it into your own production with a script that was written quickly but then shot very slick and very competently. Like it felt like a good Corman movie.
It doesn't feel like a canon film. And
it feels bigger.
It does, and the thing is, which is funny, is it cost a lot less than a lot of canon films.
It cost like the catering budget of most canon films.
Yeah, so, and I don't say that in a negative way. I love canon. I love so many other films, but they do have a specific feel to them, and this does not feel like a canon film.
Yeah, some are just very, like, lowbrow, and let's just put it, shitty. Whereas this one felt like it like a big theatrical blockbuster. You know, it helped to have Van Damme in the movie too, who was pretty much just like, he was coming off pretty hot.
Kickboxer. He was coming off a kickboxer.
At the time. So he was like fairly white hot at that time, I would say. He was getting big.
He was getting big. If they got him a couple years later, they couldn't have afforded him.
Which also is why I think Norris just wouldn't have worked. Norris was, his box office kept dropping at this time. Van Damme's was going up. I don't normally side with the studio, but I side with Canon in the fact of the cut, of the star, of the re-edit, except for the score, the cutting off the ending. I gotta go with Canon on this one for most of it. And I usually
I
don't.
Made the right decisions for this one for sure. Especially deciding to go with Van Damme instead because, you know, you got the rising star, you've got some people that recognize him from Bloodsport and Kickboxer, you got people who are looking at him going, oh, who's this guy? He seems cool. It was just all the right decisions, I would say. And I haven't heard the Heavy Metal Slinger score, but I love the score in Cyborg.
It's not so much heavy metal as it is more metal opera. If that makes sense.
It's like a brooding sort of, at least in the recut version of it for canon, the score is very like a kind of dark, brooding, almost horror synth kind of sound, which I thought was really great, especially in that opening prologue with the guy, the main baddie dude being like, I love the dead. I love this world. And that the music's like really creepy. And there's that like busted up bridge with like all the broken cityscape in the background. Like that's such a solid opening.
Okay. Cyborg, like I said, it's not my favorite in the franchise. I do enjoy it. I still got to go Glass Shadow, even though it's, you know, technically not supposed to be part of the franchise.
I agree.
Glass Shadow's a really well, okay. You look at Glass Shadow. It looks a lot more expensive than it was. And you can usually tell, especially in a cyberpunk movie, how much money they had by production design. Glass Shadow has the best production design, whereas Recycler looks like they were just using shit they found lying around.
Well, Recycler, I think they had a like $1.50 and they just were using whatever parts they had on set. So really, I think that's kind of the joke of the title was recycling. They were just recycling whatever they had lying around. Cause it's how it looked. You know, they shot in a junkyard and I mean, they did that in 2 as well, but it had an aesthetic to it.
Except in 2, the lighting felt like cyberpunk. Whereas in 3, they look like they're shooting with daylight, you know?
Yes, natural daylight. That's all it is. It's mostly, that movie takes place mostly during the day, and that's
three
when you
has
really
no
know.
Mood to it. Two
that's when you
has
really know,
mood.
The budget of a film, if it takes place mostly during the day, and then especially if you get some like day for night shit, which I don't think three had, but that's just an example I'm making, then you really know how low the budget is when they couldn't even afford to like shoot at night.
What do you guys think of the Cyborg franchise, in quotes? Let's leave out the Nemesis movies, leave out Knights, leave out Omega Doom, just the three main Cyborg movies. What do you think of this as a franchise of three films?
I think you got two really solid films that don't necessarily really connect officially. They clearly aren't meant to. Glass Shadows was obviously meant to be Glass Shadows, not Cyborg 2. It's still a fantastic film. Great showing from Jack Palance. Great showing from Angelina Jolie and Billy Drago. Really amazing aesthetic. Cyborg 1, really just cool post-apocalyptic science fiction style film. Very much reminiscent of Road Warrior, a little bit of Fist of the North Star. It's just a perfect sort of Van Damme vehicle, and it's a canon film that's a little classier than your average canon film, which is surprising considering it's one of their last ones. It was sort of their final flash flailing hit to try to stay afloat, and unfortunately they got knocked the out. Three is okay. It's watchable. It's
Richard Lynch is fun.
It's fun. Richard Lynch, as always, is always great as a villain. It's worth watching just to, if you're like a completionist, I would say. I actually wanted to mention, I don't know if you guys have seen the trailers for it. It's right now, it's a Kickstarter-backed thing. When you guys were talking about Pune's Cyborg Nemesis, at first I thought this was the movie you guys were talking about. It's a movie that's being put together called Cyborg Deadly Machine. It's very much in the, and I would actually like to promote it because I like promoting these sort of independent projects, and it looks really groovy. It actually has a, this might pique your dude's interest a bit. It's very Turbo Kid-esque. It has that kind of feeling to it. You know, Terminator looking robots and cyborgs, and it's even got some stuff that looks like it's from Hardware, very neon lit miniatures, but actually it looks pretty rad. I would very much urge anybody who's listening and the two of you to go YouTube Cyborg Deadly Machine. It looks a hell of a lot better than the actual official Cyborg 4 that we're getting. And also the main character in the film, and it's probably not meant to be the real Alex Rain, but the main guy in the film is called Alex Rain.
I like the first one, both Cyborg and Slinger. I think that they both positives that they bring to the table. Each one is, oddly enough, it's different in its own way, even though it's using a lot of the same material. And then two, I just think, even though it was not originally supposed to be a Cyborg movie, it kind of was usurped and sucked into the Cyborg franchise. I think it is a legitimately good movie. Probably my favorite of the three, just because Angelina Jolie is terrific.
And she's naked in it too.
She is naked in it and she looks phenomenal. Elias Koteas is awesome as always. Jack Palance is really delivering a fantastic performance. Billy Drago is just completely over the top. It's got so much good going on with it. The story is cool. The aesthetics is cool. Production design and everything is really, really, they're punching above their weight class with this one. Terrific little movie that does not get nearly enough love. And
oh,
then,
for sure. Cyborg Cop 2 is absolutely Little Mac knocking out Mike Tyson.
We're not talking about Cyborg Cop.
Did I say Cyborg Cop?
You said Cyborg Cop.
I did just review the first two Cyborg Cop films, and following up will be Cyborg Cop 3. Check out the Cinemasochist on YouTube.
There you go. Because that was a total mistake, huh?
Hell yeah. You gave me that one.
I lined that up right for you.
I not only bit the hand that feeds me, I bit it off.
And then Cyborg 3 is just plain goofy. It's fun if you are looking for a dumb film that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense considering, cause it is the first legitimate sequel, really, of the series. Cause 2 is not a sequel to 1. But this is a legitimate sequel cause it's the same character. They tried and they made, a very, very goofy fun movie to watch.
And yet that's the one Blade Runner steals from.
And then, but then that's the one, well, that's the thing. Who's gonna believe, we ripped off Cyborg 3. Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure we did. But I agree, that one is good as far as just like, if you just want to watch like a desert wasteland, Mad Max, post-apocalyptic style thing with some cyborgs, it very much feels like, you know, like a Warriors of the Wasteland or a battle truck or something like that. It's just fun. It's fun, like wasteland action with motorcycles and shoulder pads.
It also has the greatest American hero as a glitchy cyborg that basically has cyborg Tourette's, and that is kind of fun.
If you're like me and you have to watch all things post-apocalyptic and cyberpunk regardless, then, you know, there's another one that you may have missed.
It could be worse. I think this is a franchise that's not a franchise that Albert Pune definitely wants to make into a larger franchise, and I don't think it works. The three cyborg movies are fine on their own, although I enjoy Glass Shadow the most. These aren't really a franchise, no matter how much Albert tries. They're not a franchise.
It's better than Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Anything's better than Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And I've seen the unaired television pilot for that, so I got it even worse.
Oh.
On that note, where can people find the android now, Peter?
I'm an android? I thought I was a cyborg.
No, you're an android now. You've been changed.
Android now. The former cyborg cop used to be robot. You can find me on the Twitter at Cinematica, Facebook The Cinemasochist, YouTube The Cinemasochist, obviously 1201beyond.com, other fine programming, other shows other than this one, merchandising, Patreon at Cinematica. I have just put up a terms of contents. I have a part one of two of the Cyborg Cop trilogy. Go check that out. Watch it if you feel so inclined. Subscribe if you haven't. Please donate to my Patreon if you can. Only a buck a month is all I ask if you can do it. If you can't, that's fine.
And where can we find Cecil the Recycler?
You can find me recycling content over at goodbadflix.com, as well as goodbadflix on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, and 1201beyond.com.
Don't you mean Awfully Good Movies over on Joe Blow, which is in way a ripoff of your show?
Fucking Christ.
That, and they're doing, you know, What the Hell Happened to This Movie, which is basically my exploring series. I'm not saying that no one else has done what I've done, but it just seems incredibly suspicious that...
There's a very specific way that you do your show.
Exactly, and they're doing
exact
notice
same
the
thing.
Similarities from something that's coming out now. It's like, yeah, you're fucking aping Cecil, bud.
Which is really sad because I like Joe Blow, but it's for a bigger site to do an inferior version of something that one guy is doing. Well, at least I have the warmth of knowing that one guy, little old me, is better than a whole team of people. So.
And one guy would be me, who you can find at 1201beyond.com. You can contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Guys, try to be a cut above. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. Have a good night.
Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.